The Senate will please come to order. Clerk, please call the roll.
Atkinson. Bates. Bates. Bonamici. Bonamici. Boquist. Boquist. Burdick. Burdick. Carter. Carter. Devlin. Devlin. Dingfelder. Dingfelder. Farioli. George. George. Gerard. Hass. Hass. Johnson. Cruz. Cruz. Metzger. Metzger. Montez Anderson. Montez Anderson. Monroe. Morissette. Morissette. Morse. Morse. Nelson. Nelson. Przonsky. Przonsky. Rosenbaum. Schrader. Starr. Telfer. Verger. Walker. Walker. Whitsett. Whitsett. Winters. President Courtney.
That's right. A quorum being present, we will post the colors. And Senator Boquist will lead us in the pledge, please. Invocation today, our own Senator Joanne Verger.
You may be seated. There is a classic that was written by Napoleon Hill. It's entitled, As a Man Thinketh. Now, this classic was written long before the more popular positive thinking kind of books. And I think it was a more serious way of looking about the way we think. Napoleon Hill believed that it was the thoughts in your mind that produced your actions. And by your actions, you told all the world and all those around you who you were. Now, I would suspect that most of you came to work today with a lot of thoughts about your constituents who are being very challenged, about the state of Oregon who has serious problems, and about some of the things in your own life as you search for solutions. And so there's an old gardener digging in the garden. It's spring, and he'd like to share some thoughts with you this morning in hopes that it might be for you some food for thought. This is what he says. I'm in the garden, down on my knees, hiding these dry, old, shriveled bulbs beneath this stubborn sod. But God, you're planning future miracles today. Come resurrection spring with living water, with the warmth of love, with the light of heavenly rays. Won't this old bulb be so surprised to rise a pure white lily, trumpeting your praise?
Thank you very much, Senator Verger, for your words today under the invocation. Appreciate it very much. Thank you, Senator Boquist, for leading us in the Pledge of the Allegiance. The honorary pages today are Rachel Bell, Easton Lort, Taylor DeWolf, Ashley Krieger. They are the guest of Senator Rick Metzger. They are Senator Rick Metzger's honorary pages. Davis Darnell is the guest and the honorary page of Senator Jason Atkinson. We rely on each of you pages to get us through the day, the work that you do. And we're very grateful that you would come to your state capitol and help us do the work of the state legislature and the state senate. So thank each of you for coming here today. I'd like to extend the courtesies of the senate to you, and we appreciate what you do, and we hope you have a great day in your state capitol. Recognize Senator Floyd Bozanski, please.
Thank you, Mr. President. I'm going to ask if courtesies of the Senate can be extended. As you probably know, today is City Hall Day. There are a number of local officials that are here today. I know officials from the city of Cottage Grove are here. We just got finished meeting. So if the good president would extend courtesies to the of the Senate to the officials from Cottage Grove, including Mayor Gary Williams and City Manager Richard Myers and Tom, who else is up here? But we have two or three other people, I believe, that may be here as well. But thank you for giving courtesies to them and other City Hall officials.
Thank you, Senator. The League of Oregon Cities is in the building today. Many mayors and members of their city councils are here. I believe also city managers and other city officials may also be joining them. So I'd like to extend the official courtesy of the Oregon State Senate to each mayor and member of the city council, city councilors, as well as city managers and other staff members that may be here. We welcome you to your state capitol. You have extraordinarily difficult work to do, as we do. The nearest and dearest form of government, in my opinion, is local government, and you are the leaders of our cities throughout the state. You do great work, and we rely on you. The people of Oregon rely on you. And so we're very pleased and honored that you will come to the state capitol today and you'd visit it with us here, not only in the Senate, but in the House, as well as throughout the day, in the hallways, in the byways, in the committees. So I extend the official courtesies of the Oregon State Senate to all the members of the League of Oregon Cities who have come to the state capitol today. It's an honor and privilege to do that. Recognize Senator Jason Atkinson, please.
Mr. President, I would like to elaborate on the courtesies that you have given to a young man who's up front in a blue sweater with a perfectly pinched tie that I tied for him this morning. His name is Davis Darnell. He is the offspring of two very close friends of ours, Ted and Pam Darnell, who were fantastic athletes as cyclists. And then they started producing children, of which he is the oldest. And, Mr. President, I just wanted to reinforce the courtesies to him, because if Mr. Darnell knows what's good for him, he shall select an Oregon university to attend. Mr. President, I would suggest to you that you would suggest to him that his brains should stay within the territorial boundaries of the state of Oregon.
Well, I'd like to do that, but since two of my sons didn't do that, that would make me a bit inconsistent. So take a good look at all the great schools in the state of Oregon, but you're free to go where you want, young man. Recognize Senator Rosenbaum, please.
Thank you, Mr. President. Colleagues, it's my pleasure to welcome, and they're in the rear gallery, 30 students, eighth graders from Selwood Middle School, which is in the heart of my district, and they are here for the entire day. So I think we're getting them off to a good start with our floor session here, and please join me in extending courtesies to the Selwood students.
Yes, the Selwood students, honor and privilege to have students here from Selwood. We're hoping you're having a great day in the Capitol, your Capitol. We always like it when students come to visit us, the future leaders of tomorrow. They bring joy to us, and we hope that you're having a good day, and hope that you will come back, and we also hope you'll stay here throughout the day. Thank you very much, Senator Rosenbaum. Recognize Senator Verger, please.
Thank you, Mr. President. You gave a very warm and gracious welcome to the City Hall delegates that are here today, but I have been asked also to welcome them from the League of Oregon Cities, and so we have over 100 city officials from across the state. I'm particularly pleased that they could be here on such a momentous day as we debate and pass Senate Bill 30, the ethics reform that is critical to every community in this state. As the former mayor of Coos Bay and president of the League of Oregon Cities, I ask that everyone extend a special welcome to our partners in local government.
To the Honorable President of the Senate of the 75th Social State Assembly, attached to the list of the Governor's appointments to the State Boards and Commissions, subject to confirmation in manner provided by RS 171562 and RS 171565. These appointments and reappointments are submitted for your consideration will be effective upon Senate confirmation. Senior Lieutenant Kukulowski, Governor. State Board of Aviation, Joan Locher. Construction Board Contractors, John Mangus. Oregon Criminal Justice Commission, Walter Beglow, Gregory Hazabardian. Governing Board of State Department of Geology and Mineral Industries, Lisa Phipps. Oregon Liquor Control Commission, Alex Duarte, Ronald Broom, Mechanical Board, Daryl Skongen, Teacher Standards and Practice Commission, Melissa Sass, Commission for Women, Rebecca Anderson. Mr. President, Director, the Governor informed you the Governor has approved and signed the following bills, Senate Bill 86, 96, 130, 131, 139, 162, 165, 237, 268, 286, 288, 370, and 403.
The Governor's executive appointments are transmitted to the President's desk for referral. Message from the House.
Mr. President, the Speaker informed the House has passed. House Bills 2212, 2304, 2325, 2331, 2414, 2529, 2623, 2641, 2731, 2762, 2827, 3234, and Senate Bill 40.
Reports from conference committees. Reports from standing committees. Of course, the SR 8.551 committee report summary number 54 was distributed to members on March 31st. And summary number 55 was distributed today. This information will be recorded in the Journal of the State's report and is so ordered. Reports in special committees. Recognize Senator Richard Devlin.
Thank you, Mr. President. Senate Democrats request a 15-minute caucus in their caucus room.
Senator Ted Ferrioli, please.
Mr. President, Republicans will caucus upstairs for an equal amount of time.
All right. The Senate is in recess until... I'm going to do this. Until 10:50 a.m. on the clock on the back wall. The Senate stands in recess. Senate will please come to order. Clerk, please call the roll.
Atkinson, Atkinson, Bates, Bates, Bonamici, Bonamici, Boquist, Boquist, Burdick, Burdick, Carter, Carter, Devlin, Devlin, Dingfelder, Dingfelder, Ferrioli, Ferrioli, George, George, Gerard, Gerard, Hass, Johnson, Johnson, Cruz, Cruz, Metzger, Mons Anderson, Monroe, Morissette, Morissette, Morse, Morse, Nelson, Nelson, Brzezinski, Rosenbaum, Schrader, Starr, Starr, Telfer, Telfer, Berger, Walker, Walker, Whitsett, Whitsett, Winters, Winters, President Courtney.
A quorum is present. The Senate recess following the order reports from special committees and will resume under propositions and motions and is so ordered. Recognize Senator Johnson.
Mr. President, I move the consideration of HCR 9 be taken from its place on today's calendar and placed on the Monday, April 6th calendar.
Senator Johnson has moved this consideration of SCR 9 be taken from its place on today's calendar and placed on Monday's, April 6th calendars. To your motion.
Mr. President, the family and their extended network of friends are coordinating schedules in order to be present on the floor for this important memorial.
Thank you. The question is on taking SCR 9 from today's calendar and placing it on Monday's April 6th calendar. All those in favor, please say aye. Aye. Those opposed, no. This motion is carried. Recognize Senator Devlin.
Thank you, Mr. President. Colleagues, I move that consideration of Senate Bill 30 be made a special order of business at the head of today's third reading calendar.
Senator Richard Devlin has moved that consideration of SB 30 be taken from its, be made a special order of business at the head of today's third reading calendar. To your motion.
Thank you, Mr. President. This will allow us to expedite our business today. There are a number of people here in the building waiting to see the Senate's result on this bill.
The question is on making SB 30, a special order of business at the head of today's third reading calendar. Those in favor will say aye. Aye. And those opposed, no. The motion is carried. Action executive points requiring the Senate confirmation. Introduction, first reading of Senate measures. Second reading of Senate measures.
Senate Bill 298, Relating to Forfeited Animals. Senate Bill 299, Relating to Possession of Domestic Animals. Senate Bill 594, Relating to Exemption from Property Taxation. Senate Bill 622, Relating to Geese. Senate Bill 775, Relating to Ballot Titles.
These are passed to the calendar. We will now proceed to the special order of business. The clerk will read the bill.
Senate Bill 30, Relating to Government Ethics and Court Emergency.
Recognize Senator Richard Devlin.
Thank you, Mr. President, Senate colleagues. Senate Bill 30 comes to you from your Senate Rules Committee on a unanimous 5-0 vote. I want to actually thank the members of their committee for the patience they displayed on this bill. We've spent literally 3 months on this bill in committee. Senate Bill 30 will protect the privacy of hundreds of volunteer public servants across the state without weakening the ethical standards enacted 2 years ago in the 2007 Oregon Ethics Reform Act. The changes incorporated in Senate Bill 30 are the result of recommendations from the Ethics Reform Review Team called by the Senate President, Speaker of the House, and the governor in response to mass resignations of local officials in April 2008. The interim House and Senate Rules Committee worked through the recommendations of the team, taking public testimony in the Capitol here and in Eastern Oregon. This session, the Rules Committee held, I believe, 9 public hearings to listen to the concerns of the needs of the parties involved. I'm pleased to present the product of this work to you today with my co-carrier, Republican colleague, Senator Ted Farrioli. Whenever you pass sweeping and far-reaching legislation, there are unintended consequences. The Rules Committee heard about these consequences throughout the interim and worked with mayors, city councilors, commissioners, board members, and open government advocates across Oregon to address their concerns. The bill we are voting on today speaks to these concerns and will help local jurisdictions act in accordance with the public interest to maintain strong standards while not creating unreasonable hurdles for compliance. The state has a strong history of citizen engagement, and we want to protect and encourage civic participation. One of the key intentions of Senate Bill 30 is to clear up definitional ambiguity in the law to give cities, counties, and special districts clarity about what is expected of them and their officials. Unlike the legislature, many local jurisdictions don't have the type of resources we have to seek legal counsel. These fixes provide clear guidance so that we can ensure both transparency in government and make compliance more straightforward for the typical public official. Here is just a very brief summary of the bill. It clarifies the definition of public official. It cleans up the definition of legislative and administrative interest. It removes the requirement to disclose the extended list of relatives and requires the redaction of previously reported lists. It requires annual reporting but eliminates all the quarterly reports. It streamlines the SEI income reporting requirements, delays implementation of the electronic filing and disclosure system, adds a number of state agency heads to the SEI filing list that have been left out for years that probably should have been on, reinstates the ability for public officials to rely on the guide to public officials put out by the ethics commissions, allows reliance on staff advisory opinions from the ethics commission, allows public official to attend a reception meeting meal in their official capacity, modifies the not-for-profit status to comply with 501c3 IRS designation as it relates to expenses paid by nonprofit organizations, gets rid of the prohibition on entertainment but makes it subject to the existing gift limit, acknowledges that many public officials have outside business and volunteer activity and may receive gifts as part of that, and that is exempt from the limitations. It also does something that really doesn't have the effect of law, but the existing law has a preamble. It adds some language to that preamble, basically identifying very clearly that we appreciate the work of public officials that serve throughout this state, many of them volunteers, many of them without compensation. This is a good bill. It addresses many of your concerns. I urge your adoption.
Thank you, Senator Devlin. Discussion. Senator Farrioli, do you wish to close?
Yes, Mr. President. Thank you. Mr. President, the Capitol building may be the capital of good intentions, I think it is. It also may be the capital of unintended consequences. And we've seen that occasionally. And in trying to do the good work that we believed Oregonians wanted us to do with ethics reform in the previous session, I think we possibly went too far in some directions, and I believe this bill corrects much of what we did that could be considered perhaps unintended consequences. My good colleague across the aisle mentioned the features of the bill. I won't repeat those except to say that many of the locally elected officials that serve in 1,000 different boards and commissions in many different capacities will find that their annual filing is much easier for them, much less invasive, much more comfortable for them than the previous iteration. Locally elected officials and volunteers are, in fact, the lifeblood of Oregon communities. We simply can't operate our communities without them. These are the people who operate the public safety systems, keep our libraries open, provide emergency medical services, serve on a myriad of boards and commissions. They are rarely paid. They do often the equivalent of a full-time job. Last year, our well-intentioned ethics reforms unfairly subjected some of these local officials and volunteer officials to an invasive reporting requirement and some unnecessary limitations. With this bill, I believe we are encouraging Oregonians to serve their state and their communities. By taking another look at the reform that we did with ethics, I believe this bill sets some wrongs to right. There's some common sense adjustments in Senate Bill 30. Local volunteers and elected officials won't be treated with a gotcha mentality. I think this bill extends the tradition of honoring and respecting those citizens in Oregon that serve on our boards and commissions and as our elected officials. And I'm grateful to the chairman of the committee and proud to stand with him in support of this revisitation, and proud to stand with him in support of Senate Bill 30. I hope we can send this bill to our colleagues on the other side of the building with a unanimous vote. Mr. President, thank you very much.
Thank you, Senator Ted Farriole. Question now arises upon the third reading, the final passage of Senate Bill 30. All those in favor will say aye. When the names are called, all those opposed, no. Clerk, please call the roll.
Mons Anderson.
Excuse me.
Monroe. Morissette.
Six strikes. Stop. Senator Carter, for what purpose do you...
Oh, I'm sorry.
All right. Proceed. Thank you.
Morris. Nelson. Brzezinski. Rosenbaum. Schrader. Starr. Telfer. Berger. Walker. Whitsett. Winters. Atkinson. Bates. Bonamici. Boquist. Burdick. Carter. Devlin. Dingfelder. Farioli. George. Gerard. Haas. Johnson. Cruz. Metzger. President Courtney.
Yes.
Voting no. Boquist, Carter, Cruz, Starr. 26 ayes.
Senate Bill 30, having received a constitutional majority, is declared passed. Senator Carter, what purpose do you rise?
Vote explanation.
Senator Carter, please state your vote explanation.
My vote explanation is that I voted no for this bill today. Is because I think that we can go too far in many things. And as a state official making $19,000 a year, the many meetings that I have with people in my district, as well as with some of the people that are interested in government's explanation of itself, that I think it creates a penalty as opposed to encouraging relationships by which you can better get your message out and talk to other people about their interest in government, and that it makes it it feels as if I am for sale as an elected official, and I think it penalizes people from doing good work in this state, and that's why I voted no.
Recognize Senator Boquist. What purpose do you rise?
Vote explanation, Mr. President.
Please put your vote explanation on the record.
Thank you, Mr. President. Colleagues, I voted no 2 years ago on the original bill that brought this, and there are many great things in Senate Bill 30 that improve the original bill I voted against, but in my district there are still some issues unresolved. Thank you, Mr. President.
Thank you. Any further vote explanations? Recognize Senator Cruz.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. President. Vote explanation. Pretty much similar to what's been said. Colleagues, we didn't have an ethics problem in the state of Oregon, but one of the things that wasn't fixed that I think needed to be was to exempt local boards and commissions. Volunteer people who serve their community out of the goodness of their heart should not be under the jurisdiction of the state. And in my district, we have had trouble getting members on those boards simply because they don't want Big Brother looking into their business. And that should have, at the very minimum, been addressed.
Third reading of Senate measure. The clerk will read the bill.
Senate Bill 5539 with advance administration of PERS and declaring emergency.
Recognize Senator Winters.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, Senate Bill 5539 is the budget bill for the public employees retirement system, which is commonly known as PERS. PERS administers retirement plans that cover most of Oregon's public employees. It also administers self-pay health care plans for qualified retirees. Your Joint Committee on Ways and Means recommends a budget of $6.6 billion other funds and 362 full-time equivalent positions. The budget includes 7 policy packages and continues resources needed to handle ongoing workload, process improvement, and system conversion task, since the recommendation is consistent with the original budget bill, no bill amendments are needed. Mr. President, the total of 362 positions are recommended, which is a decrease of 39 positions from the current budget. That's about a 10% decrease. The budget includes 327 permanent positions to support the agency's workload demands and 35 limited duration positions. These demands, Mr. President, are tied to plan complexities that was associated with the 2003 reform legislation and the number of retirement plan members. Mr. President, as we look at this budget, and we look at what the new positions, they're not new positions, and I need to emphasize that. They are positions that were in the budget that were limited durations, and we have decreased those numbers by 14%. Mr. President, the 2009 PERS operational budget will also be reduced by $3.3 million from the current biennium operating budget, while including some $8 million in one-time expenditures associated with agency major IT systems conversion. The PERS operating budget represents 1.3% of its total budget. The 5-member PERS board with 3 private sector members tightly monitor agency's expenditure through monthly budget reports. The agency is currently projecting a positive budget variance of about $2.3 million through the remainder of the biennium. Mr. President, PERS is not exempt from the volatile economy that is occurring today. Your Joint Committee on Ways and Means recommends approval of Senate Bill 5539.
Thank you, Senator Winters. Discussion. Question now rises upon the third reading and the final passage of Senate Bill 5539. Those opinion bills are passed, say aye. Those opposed, no. Clerk, please call the roll.
Monroe. Morissette. Morse. Nelson. Brzezinski. Rosenbaum. Schrader. Starr. Telfer. Verger. Walker. Whitsett. Winters. Atkinson. Bates. Bonamici. Boquist. Burdick. Burdick.
Senator Burdick. Go on.
Carter. Devlin. Dingfelder. Ferrioli. George. Gerard. Haas. Johnson. Cruz. Metzger. Lawrence Anderson. President Courtney.
Yes.
Not answering. Burdick. Voting no. Atkinson. Ferrioli. George. Gerard. Cruz. Whitsett. 24 ayes.
Senate Bill 5539. Have received a constitutional majority declared passed. Clerk will read the bill.
Senate Bill 135. Wind alcoholic beverages.
Recognize Senator Starr.
Thank you, Mr. President. Colleagues, Senate Bill 135 comes to you unanimously out of your Business and Transportation Committee. This is a simple bill that would require out-of-state manufacturers of distilled spirits to obtain a certificate of approval to ship product to OLCCs. This certificate would create a jurisdictional mechanism whereby the OLCC could use to enforce its financial assistance laws when violated by out-of-state manufacturers of distilled spirits. Urge an aye vote.
Thank you. Recognize Senator Gerard, please.
Thank you, Mr. President. I need to declare a potential conflict.
Please place your conflict on the record.
Since the ethics law has not cleared the House yet, I need to declare that my brother is an OLCC agent. Thank you.
I wish my brother was a liquor agent. Question now arises upon third reading and final passage. The Senate Bill 135. Those opinion bills passed, say aye. Those opposed, no. Clerk, please call the roll.
Morissette. Morse. Nelson. Brzezinski. Rosenbaum, Schrader, Starr, Telfer, Berger, Walker, Whitsett, Winters, Atkinson, Bates, Bonamici, Boquist, Burdick, Burdick, Carter, Devlin, Devlin.
Senator Devlin.
Dingfelder. Ferrioli. George. Gerard. Haas. Johnson. Cruz. Metzger. Lawrence Anderson. Monroe. President Courtney.
Yes.
30 ayes.
Senate Bill 135, having received constitutional majority, declared passed. Clerk will read the bill.
Senate Bill 191, relating to surface mining operations, declaring emergency.
I got an aye, Senator Dingfelder.
Thank you, Mr. President. In July of 1972, the Mine Land Reclamation Act became law. I'm sure many of you didn't have that on your radar screen. Prior to this law taking effect, Columbia County passed a surface mining ordinance and was grandfathered out of the act. Today, Columbia County is the only remaining county to have its own surface mining operating permit program. Recently, the county approached the Department of Geology and Mineral Industries and expressed their desire to repeal their program. Under current law, the department would be required to assume the regulatory responsibility. However, there are significant differences between the two permitting programs that would need to be resolved should the county decide to turn over their authority to the department. Senate Bill 191 includes the needed procedures and requirements to address how the county's existing surface mining permits and limited exemptions would be handled under the department's jurisdiction. The department has worked with both the county and the industry in order to create this legislative remedy to ensure a smooth transition. There was no testimony in opposition of this bill, and it passed out of my committee, the Senate Environment and Natural Resources Committee, unanimously. Colleagues, I urge your aye support of Senate Bill 191.
Thank you, Senator. Recognize Senator Johnson, please.
Thank you, colleagues. I have the privilege of representing Columbia County. This is a good bill. Columbia County is the only county not under the purview of Dogami for regulation of surface mining. This is long overdue and a good bill.
Thank you. Recognize Senator Frank Morris.
Thank you, Mr. President. I would like to declare a potential conflict of interest.
Please state your conflict for the record, please.
I have a potential conflict of interest in that I have business interests that will be affected by this bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator. Conflict is noted. Discussion? Question arises upon a third reading and final passage. Senate Bill 191. Those opinion bills pass, say aye. Those opposed, no. Clerk, please call the roll.
Morris. Nelson. Brzezinski. Rosenbaum, Schrader, Starr, Telfer, Berger, Walker, Whitsett, Winters, Atkinson. Bates. Bonamici. Boquist. Burdick. Carter. Devlin. Dingfelder. Ferrioli. George. Girard. Haas. Johnson. Cruz. Metzger. Montes Anderson. Monroe. Morissette. President Courtney.
Yes.
30 ayes.
Senate Bill 191, having received a constitutional majority, declared passed. Clerk reads the bill.
Senate Bill 386, Wind Debt Collection Practices and Coin Emergency.
Recognize Susan Bonamici.
Thank you very much, Mr. President. Colleagues, I want to start my remarks on this bill today with something that was actually pointed out by the Oregon Collectors Association in public testimony. And this is from the Federal Fair Debt Collection Practices Act. It is the purpose of this title to eliminate abusive debt collection practices by debt collectors, to ensure that those debt collectors who refrain from using abusive debt collection practices are not competitively disadvantaged, and to promote consistent state action to protect consumers against debt collection abuses. Colleagues, that's what Senate Bill 386A is about. Oregon's Unlawful Debt Collection Practices Act was passed in the 1970s, actually with the support of the collection agencies. And they explained that the law was passed with their support and modeled on the federal act. And this makes sense from a policy view, that we should have a level playing field for everyone collecting debts in Oregon to make sure that those who are following the law, which is likely to be most of them, are not put at a competitive disadvantage or given a bad name by those who cross the line. Let me tell you, colleagues, there are those who are crossing the line. Case. Janice Tuohy came to our committee and testified that she was receiving repeated phone calls at work. It was not even her debt, and they proceeded until she went to her supervisor and got her phone number changed. Case, George and Linda Thomas, seniors. He's self-employed. She's in a wheelchair, permanently disabled. They had to go through bankruptcy, and a debt was discharged. 10 years later, they started calling them at home on the morning of Christmas Eve about that discharged debt. Case, woman in a wheelchair trying to dial 911 to get medical help for her son who was having a heart attack. The collectors kept calling. She couldn't get through and had to wheel her wheelchair through the rain. Case, collection agency repeatedly calling the Springfield home of the mother and stepfather of Brian Gunderson, a 31-year-old U.S. Army sergeant now deployed in Iraq. The phone call started in April in an attempt to collect on a loan he took out to buy a pickup and continued even after the couple told the company to cease calling. This company said they would contact his commanding officer who would rough him up since soldiers are not allowed to leave deployment in debt. Major Michael Brabish, a spokesman for the National Guard, said many combat troops are in debt and that's not against any rules, and soldiers are often the victims of predatory debt collection. Colleagues, Senate Bill 386A changes the Oregon Unlawful Debt Collection Practices Act as follows. First, it adds a prohibition about collecting debts that do not exist, if a debt collector knows or has reason to know of that fact. And this change is intended to address identity theft victims primarily, or consumers with common names who establish that the debt is not theirs. There has been a proliferation of debt buyers who subscribe to the sue first and ask questions later method of doing business. In fact, in committee testimony, we heard that debt collectors will file thousands of lawsuits against consumers without any underlying documentation and hope that those consumers will default. According to the National Consumer Law Center, it is startling. Debt buyers have learned to work the system to win judgments and coerce payments even when they have the wrong person or lack evidence that the consumer owes the debt. Even when the debt collector violates the law, the chances of being caught are minimal and the consequences are cheap. So Senate Bill 386 will create an incentive for all debt collectors to do what most of them already do, and that's to take steps to validate the debt before they start collecting. I want to emphasize that this provision is not intended to apply to situations where there is actually a debt that's owed and the amount is in dispute. Next, the law now prohibits profane, obscene, or abusive statements. This bill simply adds a prohibition against false or misleading statements. This is very typical language used in other statutes, like laws governing the sales of security, sale of property, and also in the Federal Fair Debt Collection Practices Act. It's very common in statute, and contrary to what some of you have heard, it does not violate free speech rights under well-established historical exceptions to free speech guarantees. And importantly, this provision does not change the requirement. A plaintiff still has to show that the collector willfully violated the law. At a minimum, the consumer would have to show that the collector should have known that the representation was false or misleading. So things like transcription or accounting errors would not create liability. And also to clarify, this is not intended to situations where, for example, the collector alleges that the consumer owes $1,000 but really only owes $900. That's not a misleading statement to allege that they owed $1,000. And let me tell you that any attorney who alleged that would be risking an award of attorney's fees against his or her client under the bad faith attorney fee provision. Currently, the law provides that compliance with the federal law establishes compliance with the state law. Senate Bill 386 balances that by providing that violation of the federal law is also violation of the state law. One difference, however, is that it's harder to prove the case in Oregon, and let me explain why, and that's because the federal law is a strict liability provision, meaning violation if the law is violated, the consumer wins. Here, however, the plaintiff still has to prove that the collector acted willfully to prove a violation, and this bill does not change that. Finally, Senate Bill 386 changes the attorney fee provision to conform with the federal act. And the same as the foreclosure rescue scam bill that we passed with overwhelming support in 2008 and all the industry supported. Attorney's fees are awarded to a consumer only if he or she proves a violation of the act and against a consumer if the case is brought in bad faith or for purposes of harassment. And I also want to point out that the statutory damages in this act, colleagues, have not been increased since 1977, and that this bill doesn't increase them. It's $200. That's the statutory damages, $200. The federal act is $1,000. And without this attorney fee provision, consumers would find it extremely difficult to find somebody to help them pursue their case. This is an issue of access to justice. Now, it's been suggested that we don't need this law because consumers can complain to the Attorney General or to the Federal Trade Commission. Well, neither entity can represent individual consumers. If you recall the Attorney General bill that we passed, it's Senate Bill 328, they were going to do that with existing resources and certainly won't be able to bring a case in every instance. And I checked with the Federal Trade Commission to ask them how many debt collection cases they brought in Oregon in the past decade. The answer, colleagues, was zero. We need to put an end to unlawful harassing debt collection practices that are hurting our constituents in Oregon. Please join me in voting aye on Senate Bill 386A. Thank you, Mr. President.
Thank you, Senator Von Meech. You recognize Senator Gerard, please.
Thank you, Mr. President. I'll be brief. Colleagues, in my younger days, I used to pheasant hunt. And this bill is very similar to pheasant hunting. And I wasn't the best of shots. And so the phrase was, I aimed at a rooster and I shot a hen. And that's exactly what we're doing in this bill. The problem is out-of-state debt collectors, not in-state. Almost all the testimony that we had, the problems were out-of-state debt collectors. This bill goes out at in-state debt collectors and also first-party debt collectors. I'm a dentist. I'm a first-party debt collector. You come in and put a crown in your mouth and you owe me $400, I have to go collect this debt. So this is putting me in a very liable position as a first-party debt collector. I can be sued, and then and Lori would be the one collecting the debt probably if she gave false testimony or false amounts or something to that degree. And then they can be awarded punitive damages and attorney's fees. Now, I'm sorry, but you need to take out first-party debt collectors. And actually, there's just no need for this bill, period. Thank you.
Okay, recognize Senator Rod Monroe, please.
Thank you, Mr. President. First of all, I'd like to thank Senator Bonamici for her work on this measure. She's done an excellent job. She's listened to concerns, made some modifications. There's still one portion of the bill that makes me a bit nervous in that. I've always been concerned about the fact that we live in a litigious society, and I've always been concerned about passing laws that create additional lawsuits. I know that there are unscrupulous attorneys out there who are just looking for somebody that they can convince to file a lawsuit so that they can collect their fees if they win. So I would hope that when this bill gets to the House, that the House will take a serious look at the attorney fee changes in this measure and review them very, very carefully. I'd be more comfortable with it if it had some modifications in that area. But I've committed to vote for the bill, and most of the bill certainly is badly needed. We need to stop unscrupulous debt collecting practices. So I will be reluctantly supporting the bill today.
Thank you. Recognize Senator Margaret Carter, please.
Thank you, Mr. President. I rose today to support this bill, but to remind us on this floor that the most vulnerable to the activities of the unscrupulous, to use the senator's words, Senator Monroe's words, and it's true, debt collectors, because they are very honorable and very upstanding business people in this community as well. But I think we have to realize that we do have problems in this state. And it's mostly imposed upon the elderly. And I think somewhere along the line that if we, the legislature, can't be responsible for protecting the elderly who are so vulnerable to these kind of phone calls, basically at home during the daytime, late night phone callings and things of that nature, then something goes wrong with public policy, in my view. And so it says to me that when we look at the ethical practices of what people do, if you owe a debt, you should pay it. If not, you're going to have somebody calling you to pay the money. And that's reasonable, and that is what should happen. But you have to protect the elderly from those kind of things that happens to them when they get confused many times about the phone calls. They are not the right person. As a matter of fact, they called the wrong woman one day, and that woman was Margaret Carter, that my granddaughter had a bill, a phone bill. It was one of the wireless people. And by the time I got through calling the state and Washington, D.C., they were glad to disassociate me with my granddaughter because I was paying for her money in college. Now, I did have to tell you, I felt the pressure at first because the legislature was in session, and I ended up paying about $400 before it came to me, this is not your bill. Why are you paying it? Because they associated my granddaughter with me because I was paying for her schooling. And I'm telling you, if somebody like Margaret Carter can be fooled into this, what about those people who are vulnerable themselves and at home and trying to do the right thing and this kind of calling, constant calling, and people getting them on the phone gets them? So sometimes they don't get the messages quick and don't have the opportunity that some of the rest of us had. And then two Christmases ago, I got a phone call from my sister, ex-sister-in-law, and she said she was living with her daughter. The daughter owned the property. The people got upset with the fact that she was never at home, and she was in the house, and they came in on Christmas Day, and she just had the worst Christmas of her whole life because the guy was up in her face just hollering at her because the mortgage has not been paid or something of that nature. My point is, these people are vulnerable. And we need practices in place that's going to protect these people. And when I look at what the ARP people were saying, victims of identity theft can legally be harassed about a debt that is not even theirs. Or it levels the playing field between consumers and debt collectors. Everybody has recourse in this bill. Attorneys who might be filing frivolous lawsuits, they have some protection. And even the consumer who might want to present a frivolous lawsuit, they end up having to pay the debt in this bill. And I just hope that the hearts and minds of the people would prevail in supporting senior citizens on this bill.
Thank you. Further discussion? Senator Bonamici, do you wish to close?
Thank you, Mr. President. Very briefly, I wanted to address a couple of the concerns that were raised. First, from the senator from the pheasant hunting senator, I believe, from Lyons. I don't know where that is. Senator raised some concerns about first-party debt collectors being included in this bill. First-party debt collectors have been covered by this law since 1977. This bill doesn't change that. This bill collects people collecting a consumer debt. And this doesn't add anybody at all to the provisions of the Oregon Unfair Debt Collection Practices Act. And with regard to the false or misleading statements, certainly, if there was going to be a flood of litigation, there would have been a flood of litigation because it already prohibits abusive, profane, or obscene debt collection statements. So I don't see this as adding to litigation at all. In fact, there's a very well-established body of law about what constitutes false or misleading statements. I think it will give guidance to collectors. With regard to the comments that were made about the attorney fee provision, I frankly think that we're going to see less litigation because all the debt buyers won't be suing people willy-nilly without any underlying documentation. So I see this as fewer lawsuits in the system. And I also want to point out with regard to the attorney fee provision, this specifically says on page 3 of the bill, lines 37 through 40, that if a court finds that a debtor brought an action under this section in bad faith or solely for the purposes of harassment, the court may award a prevailing debt collector reasonable attorney's fees. So I tell you that small handful of attorneys in this state who will take a debt collection case, because I tell you there isn't money in these cases, they're doing them because it's the right thing to do, there's a provision in there to prohibit frivolous litigation. Colleagues, our constituents don't need to be the target of unscrupulous sue first, ask questions later practices. With so much identity theft, many Oregon consumers are being called at all hours of the day or night, at home and at work, and subject to harassment for debts that often are not theirs. But even when the debts are owed, our constituents should not be subject to lies and harassment in connection with the collection of these debts. And in difficult economic times, we're seeing more and more consumers struggling. And the senator from Multnomah County, northeast Portland, pointed out how this is particularly affecting seniors. And I point out the AARP floor letter on your desk in support, and also the vulnerable members of our communities. According to the National Consumer Law Center, as debt rises among older consumers, they become more likely to face debt collectors. As distressing as abusive debt collection practices are for everyone, they are particularly problematic for seniors. A frail elderly person is more easily upset by an abusive telephone call. Indeed, the stress from harassing tactics can actually threaten their health. Older consumers living alone are more often targets of abusive tactics because they may be socially isolated. In addition, because they're home during daytime hours, they're more accessible to collectors. Colleagues, debt collectors who cross the line should be held responsible. This bill does not impede the lawful collection of debt. Please join me in voting aye on Senate Bill 386A. And, Mr. President, I respectfully request a call of the Senate. Thank you.
Senator Bonamici has demanded a call of the Senate. She is joined by Senator Devlin and Senator Rosenbaum. The doorkeepers will bar the doors, and the sergeant arms will attend. And the clerk will please call the roll.
Atkinson. Bates. Bonamici. Boquist, Burdick, Carter, Devlin, Dingfelder, Ferrioli, George, Gerard, Haas, Johnson, Cruz, Metzger, Mons Anderson, Monroe, Morissette, Morse, Nelson, Brzezinski, Rosenbaum, Schrader, Starr, Telfer, Verger, Walker, Whitsett, Winters, President Courtney.
Here. All members are present. The question now rises upon a third reading, the final passage of Senate Bill 386. Those who are in the bill should pass will say aye as the names are called. Those opposed, no. The clerk will please call the roll.
Nelson.
No.
Brzezinski.
Aye.
Rosenbaum.
Aye.
Schrader.
No.
Starr. Telfer,
aye.
Berger,
aye.
Walker,
no.
Whitsett,
no.
Winters,
no.
Atkinson,
no.
Bates,
aye.
Bonamici,
aye.
Boquist,
no.
Burdick.
Aye.
Carter.
Aye.
Devlin.
Aye.
Dinkfelder.
Aye.
Ferrioli.
No.
George.
No.
Girard.
No.
Haas.
Aye.
Johnson.
No.
Cruz.
No.
Metzger.
Aye.
Juanes Anderson.
Aye.
Monroe. Morissette. Morse. President Courtney.
Yes.
Voting no, Atkinson, Boquist, Ferrioli, George, Girard, Johnson, Cruz, Morse, Nelson, Schrader, Starr, Walker, Whitsett, Winters. 16 ayes.
Senate Bill 386, having received a constitutional majority, is declared passed. Clerk will read the bill.
Senate Bill 462, relating eligibility of unemployment insurance benefits in a court emergency.
Recognize Senator Rob Monroe.
Thank you, Mr. President. Senate Bill 462A comes to you with the unanimous support of your Ways and Means Committee. It has to do with unemployment insurance and the federal stimulus money. If we do what the feds ask us to do, we get an extra $90 million for unemployed Oregonians. And you know the unemployment rate is 10.8 and rising. What the bill does is it would change unemployment insurance to give two options. Currently, the base year, you have to have worked four out of the last five calendar quarters. This would add an alternate base year when the individual does not meet the first requirement, and it would allow them, if they have completed the most recent calendar quarter, and if they have sufficient earnings in the most recent four quarters, to qualify. Currently, of the 17,000 unemployment claims in Oregon, 8% of the total, that have been declared non-valid. Under this bill, about a third of those, or an additional 6,000 workers, would be qualified through the alternate base year. This bill will have the primary benefit to the lowest income workers, Senator Carter, those who do intermittent work, and those who need it the most. I'd also like to say that unemployment insurance is the best stimulus there can be. When the federal government puts money out as stimulus money, it wants that money spent to stimulate the economy. Unemployment insurance, believe me, it gets spent. This also would create some additional jobs for Oregonians. 16.65 new FTE, all federally funded. No matching Oregon money. It's a good bill. I urge your vote.
Thank you, Senator. I'm going to recognize Senator Rosenbaum, please.
Thank you, Mr. President. Colleagues, I just want to also mention that this bill, though it comes from Ways and Means, did originate in the Senate Commerce and Workforce Development Committee. And we had ample testimony there. The carrier's done a great job of explaining what the bill does, so I have little to add except to say that this bill is good for everyone in Oregon. I think it's hard to imagine a bill that would bring more help to our state right now at this time of rising unemployment. Employers will benefit because this money will flow into our trust fund, and that will help rates be stable or not go up as fast as they would. It will certainly help the unemployed workers who will qualify for benefits and their families. And I think it's really something we can do now to provide real help to real people. Thank you, Mr. President.
Thank you. Recognize Senator Larry George, please.
Thank you, Mr. President. I just want to explain, I was a no vote in committee, and in looking at this bill, I recognized that there was a $90 million federal incentive to be on board. But I looked at the long-term health of the trust fund. I looked at the long-term implications. At some point, that federal money goes away, and that additional burden is placed onto Oregon businesses. And we do not know exactly when we will come out of a recession. The way our fund works, actually, this money will be accelerated and spent by keeping the rate lower. but ultimately, long-term, there is an impact on the fund and employers. And I would say that, probably a better way to help folks on unemployment is to reverse something we did earlier in the session, which is to raise taxes on those benefits. So it was a, very interesting bill. I recognize the situation, but at this point, when you look out in the long-term future, I'm going to vote no. Thank you, Mr. President.
Thank you. Further discussion? Senator Monroe, you wish to close?
Yes, please. Briefly, during the Great Depression, Franklin Roosevelt was asked about some of his New Deal programs. Those who queried him said, Mr. President, aren't you afraid of how this is going to work out in the long run? And Franklin Roosevelt's answer was, people don't eat in the long run, they eat every day. This clearly will have a positive effect on unemployment taxes for at least the next several years. We don't know what's going to happen 5 or 10 years from now. That's why future legislatures will have an opportunity to review it. Right now, this is very good public policy for the citizens of Oregon that need to eat every day.
Question now arises upon a third reading, the final passage of Senate Bill 462. Those who opinion bills passed say aye. Those opposed, no. Clerk, please call the roll.
Brzezinski. Rosenbaum. Schrader. Schrader. Starr. Telfer. Berger. Walker. Walker. Whitsett. Winters. Atkinson. Bates. Bonamici. Boquist. Burdick. Carter. Devlin. Dingfelder. Ferrioli. George. Gerard. Hass. Johnson. Cruz. Metzger. Bonas Anderson. Monroe. Morissette. Morse. Nelson. President Courtney.
Yes.
Voting no. Boquist, George, Cruz, 27 ayes.
Senate Bill 462, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. Senator Boquist, for what purpose do you rise?
Vote explanation, Mr. President.
Please file your vote explanation.
Thank you, Mr. President. As was pointed out on the floor, this is a good bill. It helped 7,000 more Oregonians. I voted no in a protest. 2 months ago, or not even 2 months ago, we were on the floor here and talked about going back and addressing the unemployment insurance issues under the tax code, which we have not gotten out yet. And it was pointed out, there are 10,000 individuals who are not helped by this bill and 100,000 other individuals filing but not receiving benefits also. Yes, everybody's hungry, but we need to do a lot more to feed them today, not in the future. Thank you, Mr. President.
Thank you. I recognize Senator Cruz. What purpose do you rise?
Thank you, Mr. President. Vote explanation.
Please file your vote explanation.
Mr. President, I understand what this bill will do, and I don't have an objection to that. But there's a pattern developing, and this is more of a protest vote, as we look at all the federal stimulus dollars and our eagerness to spend them, and not only in this arena, but in many others arenas, we are setting up false economies, we are setting up cliffs that a future legislature is going to have to deal with when we fall off those cliffs. And I think we need to be more deliberative, we need to be more thoughtful in how we utilize all of these federal dollars to make sure that we aren't setting up scenarios where, in this case, at some point in time, employers are going to be asked to pay significantly more for their portion of unemployment insurance because of the false economy that these federal dollars are creating.
The clerk will read the bill.
Senate Bill 582, and sex notification care facilities.
Can I send up Boquist, please?
Thank you, Mr. President. SB 582 comes from your Committee on Judiciary, has no revenue impact, no fiscal impact, came out unanimous. Of course, somebody was absent, so maybe it wasn't unanimous. But anyway, repeals the sunset on the requirement to notify long-term care facilities that a person seeking admission was convicted of a sex crime. This simply ends the sunset on an existing program. Thank you, Mr. President.
Thank you. Discussion? Question arises upon a third reading and final passage of Senate Bill 582. Those opinion bills passed, say aye. Those opposed, no. Clerk, please call the roll.
Rosenbaum. Schrader. Schrader. Starr. Telfer. Berger. Walker. Whitsett. Winters. Atkinson.
Senator Atkinson?
Yes. Bates. Bonamici. Boquist. Burdick. Carter. Devlin. Dingfelder. Ferrioli. George. Gerard. Haas. Johnson. Cruz. Metzger. Montes Anderson. Monroe. Morissette. Morse. Nelson. Przonski. President Courtney.
Yes.
30 ayes.
Senate Bill 582, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. Clerk will read the bill.
Senate Bill 599, Relating to Service Mining.
Senator Atkinson, Jason Atkinson, please.
Thank you, colleagues. This is Senate Bill 599. This was a bill sent to us from Senator Morris. It was actually a good horse until the committee got a hold of it and then made it into a camel. It's actually now a bad bill, and I'd like to urge a no vote.
Is there further discussion? Senator Frank Morris, please.
It's probably too late for a remonstrance, Senator or President, but but I do need to declare a potential conflict of interest.
Please state your conflict of interest.
And that is, Mr. President, that this bill would affect business interests that I have. So, Mr. President, it is a good bill. Thank you.
Thank you. Does anybody wish to say something other than that good about this bill before we vote on it? Senator Atkinson, do you wish to close on this measure, please?
This bill comes to us from Ocapa Dogami O.O, Oregon Health Science University, DAS, Department of Corrections, ODF&W, ACDC, DLCD, PUC, a bunch of them don't even care about this bill. It's a bad bill. I'd just like to say in conclusion, April Fools.
Okay, the question arises upon the third reading and final passage of Senate Bill 599. Those the opinion bill shall pass, say aye. Those opposed, no. Clerk, please call the roll.
Schrader. Schrader.
Senator Schrader.
Starr. Telfer. Berger. Walker.
Senator Walker.
Whitsett. Winters. Atkinson. Bates. Bonamici. Boquist. Boquist.
Senator Boquist.
Burdick. Carter. Devlin.
Sir Devlin.
Dingfelder. Ferrioli. George. Gerard. Haas. Haas.
Senator Haas.
Johnson. Cruz. Metzger. Montes Anderson. Monroe. Morissette. Morse. Nelson. Przonski. Rosenbaum. President Courtney.
Yes.
30 ayes.
Senate Bill 599, having received a constitutional majority, is declared passed. First reading of House measures.
House Bill 2212, the State Department of Agriculture Control Methods, Appropriate Money. House Bill 2304, in corporate mergers. House Bill 2325, on personal injury and protection benefits. House Bill 2331, related to driving on the influence of intoxicants. House Bill 2414, related to elections. House Bill 2529, related to crimes involving animals. House Bill 2623, related to prison education programs. House Bill 2641, related to online sexual corruption of a child. House Bill 2731, recallocations for public contracts. House Bill 2762, related to United States Armed Forces and Corps of Mercy. House Bill 2827, related to child abuse. House Bill 2332-34, related to clinical laboratories.
Transmitted to the President's desk for referral. Second reading of House measures. Third reading of House measures. Other business Senate, in accordance with SR 8.403, committee referral list number 84 and number 85 was distributed to members March 31st. The referrals will be recorded in the Journal and State Report and is so ordered. Announcements. Again, we will not have a floor session on Friday. We will not have a floor session on Friday. Senator Atkinson, please.
Mr. President, this is not April Fool's. Floyd McGowan Fire Brigade will be meeting today at 2 o'clock. However, our guest is. See you at 2.
Recognize Senator Richard Devlin. Senator Devlin, do you have an announcement?
Yes, thank you, Mr. President. Senate Democrats, enjoy your lunch. We have no caucus.
Senator Ferrioli, any announcements? Okay. Senator Carter, please.
I thank you, Mr. President. I want to make sure that the Ways and Means Committee understand that. I want to make sure the Ways and Means Committee understands that even though we're not having a floor session on Friday, we are having Ways and Means at 10 a.m.
Any further announcements? If there are no further announcements without objection, the Senate is adjourned until 10:15 tomorrow, Thursday, April 2nd. The Senate is now adjourned.